Thank you very much for the invitation. I'm honoured to have been invited to this, to the college. I'm also, I have to say, somewhat humbled by the rather excellence and elegant studies that have been done before, because I'm going to be working with a much simpler system about, I know, very little to do with molecules and genetics, and much of it will be to do with phenomenology rather than how things work, or finishing up with how we might do things in humans. It's also occurred to me that people don't know a great deal about the inner ear and how it's put together, so I'll start off with a few slides showing the anatomy and some of the ways in which we have labelled it to look at it. So the inner ear consists in different vertebrates. All of them have a vestibular system which is, comes along with balance and posture and orientation in space. All of them have three semicircular canals with a crista that is the sensory patch, a utricle and a saccule, or a utricular macula and a saccular macula. When you get to terrestrial vertebrates, you start getting auditory organs, the basilar papilla in the bird, the organ of Corti in the mammal. Frogs and newts, which I'm going to be looking at, have the pick up sound in the saccule, but they also have a defined amphibian papilla. All of these are mechanosensitive. That is, they pick up a mechanical signal and translate it into a neural signal. They're all basically of the same anatomy. That is, they have a sensory hair cell, each one separated from its neighbours by an intervening supporting cell. Supporting cells sit on the basement membranes and the hair cells don't. The hair cells defined by its bundle of hairs. These are a series of what are called cilia, which are modified microvilli containing actin, and a single kinocilium, which is a true cilium. They're oriented, they have a polarity, and the polarity is important because it's deflection in this plane which opens ion's channels leading to neural transmission. And the bundle orientation, or the orientation of the bundles, are similar across an epithelium. Just to show you some of those that we're going to be talking about, this is the newt saccule. Here are the hair cells, they stain for actin, and here are the hair cells and the supporting cells. The basal papilla of the chick, hair cells, supporting cells, they're oriented in particular ways. This is phalloidin, polarity. The cuticular mammary of a mammal and a bird wouldn't be very different. You've got this oriented bundle, kinocilium, and there are in the birds and mammals two sorts of hair cells, one with a big calyx around it, the other type 2, which has Bouton endings. The hearing organ is a bit different. It's the same architecture. Here are the supporting cells, hair cells separated from each other, but it has all these spaces in it. There are two sorts of defined hair cells. This one sends messages to the brain. These are involved in amplifying the signal that the inner hair cell, these outer hair cells, are involved in amplifying the signal that the inner hair cell gets. The supporting cells have a role in maintaining the homeostasis that makes the hair cell, keep the hair cell active. And by taking slices of a viable tissue, injecting a dye into a single cell along with a tracer, these cells are all linked together by huge gap junctions, and so you can see that all of the supporting cells are linked together. There's a huge syncytium throughout the tissue formed of the supporting cells. And this one's rather nicely to show where the hair cells are. Hair cells are the dark spots, dark lesions in here and here. Hair cells separated from the organ, from the supporting cells all live together. Now, during development, rounds and rounds of metastasis occur to create the right number of cells for the sensory patch. They come out of the cell cycle. Cell cycle inhibitors are expressed mainly P27 KIT1, which generates some precursor cells. And the precursor cells are hair cells and supporting cells derive from those precursor cells without intervening mitotic event. Genetically, that happens. A hair cell, all the cells want to be hair cells. They start expressing ATOH1, which is necessary to determine that fate. Those cells that do so upregulate notch, activating notch lesions, delta 1, jagged 2 is what we'll talk about later, to activate the notch system in the adjacent cell, and this inhibits that cell from becoming a hair cell. It becomes a supporting cell. So a supporting cell is, if you like, a frustrated hair cell. It wanted to be one once, but it stopped from doing so. Now, when hair cell death is something that probably, in extensive study, is probably something only that happens in humans. The things that kill hair cells are things like aminoglycoside antibiotics, which is what we use experimentally to kill them, cisplatinum, a cancer drug, noise in the organ of Corti, and aging. And humans are the only people who live with aging. Although, obviously, animals, if they get old, if they went deaf, they'd die. But in all of these systems, what happens is hair cells normally die apoptotically. The supporting cells take up the apoptotic bodies and dispose of them. Some situations you get extrusion of cells, and that's the way the Basilar papilla gets rid of its hair cells. This system of the way hair cells die means that there's no inflammation in this system. Macrophages are not recruited into this system so the hair cells die to take out the fragments. When the hair cells die, the supporting cells close the lesion. This is where the supporting cells have expanded into the hair cell space. They become a pavement epithelium with all the hair cells, supporting cells, bodies expanded to close the space. And there's a couple of hair cell. And this is from a newt. Here are bits of the apoptotic body and a supporting cell. Now, this slide I've put in from work that was done 30 years ago was really what started hair cell regeneration, the field of hair cell regeneration by Dr. Tanch. This is from a bird that he was blasting with very long, high levels of noise for 48 hours. And what he found was he had a loss of hair cells from a defined region. With noise, the loss is related to the position along the strip of auditory organ where to the frequency. So there's a particular region. Over time, he saw hair cells coming back, and during that repair, he saw hair cells with bundles that are like those that occur during development. So this is a developmental progression of the way hair bundles develop. And other people started doing lots of studies on function, and basically, you blast a hair cell, this is a hearing loss, and function recovers over this sort of length of time in birds. To give you an idea how rapidly that occurs, and to also make another point, these are from cultures treated with aminoglycoside, and normal hair cells extruded, epithelium closes, and then within 5 days there are new hair cells coming back. This is an explant. This has no nerves in it. So this is working. The regeneration can occur, doesn't require nerves for it to occur. Another classic experiment done after the ones was how do these come about? Injecting a bird with tritiated thymidine, found that in the area of damage, there were supporting cells and hair cell nuclei were labeled. Undamaged region, that didn't occur. So the damage provokes a response amongst the supporting cells to divide from which new hair cells generated. That process, we don't know anything about the signals that that promote that, but we do know from this experiment, which was done by Regina in my lab, that the proliferation is dependent on gap junctions. If you count the number of proliferating cells in a carbinoxylone inhibiting gap junction communication, you get a reduction in the amount of proliferation. This means that the signals are contained within the epithelium itself. And it means that one way of getting hair cells is that the supporting hair cells die, supporting cells go back into the cell cycle to make hair cells and supporting cells. You get back what you started with. But that's not the only way that hair cells can come about. Some experiments that Ruth did in newts, we start off with baiting the hair cells, within 3 weeks, the hair cells have come back. Now, if you incubate in that tissue with BRDU, you find this is an undamaged, these are the hair cells normally, these are what are called extramacular hair cells. You can see the proliferation is confined exclusively to the areas where there were hair cells. There's nothing outside that region. It's particularly nicely shown in the other part of the newt area, the utricle, where the hair cell loss is confined to a crescent of an anatomically distinct region called the striola, and the proliferation is confined to that region. You'll notice here, and I'll come back because it's important for a slide later on, that the other hair cells here are actually still intact. They were never killed. You can see how they separated out. Now, looking through a confocal series to look at where the BRDU labelled cells are in the regenerated saccule, you'll notice that the hair cells in green do not contain a BRDU labelled nucleus, not one of them. So these hair cells are not the daughters of dividing supporting cells. They arise by some other means, which is I tend to call phenotypic conversion. Other people call it non-mitotic transdifferentiation. To support that contention, we regenerated in the presence of blockers of mitosis, of fidicholine and cytosine ribicide, and we still get hair cells coming through. They have bundles and they look like normal hair cells here with a fidicholine block. And we can get a morphological marker of what a converting cell looks like, because if you have a supporting cell normally sitting on the basement membrane and it converts to a hair cell, you'd expect the hair cell to have a little foot. So you've got a hair cell with a foot and a foot and a foot and a foot. So this is a morphological marker for a supporting cell converting to a hair cell. So we have the idea here that what happens in the newt is that you lose the hair cells, the supporting cells, some convert into hair cells, but the others divide to produce new supporting cells. And it could be that actually it's the loss of supporting cells when the hair cell is converted to a hair cell that actually drives the proliferation. We don't know that, but that's something that we'd like to investigate. There's also the point here that in newts, they continue to make hair cells throughout life. The saccule gets bigger and bigger as the animal grows. So we have immature hair cells around the edge of the strip, but if we leave this in BRDU, in this case for 4 weeks, there's no evidence of any BRDU labelling around the edge. There's this BRDU labelling out here, there's nothing around the edge, suggesting that those hair cells are appearing without a division. That means potentially that what happens in this newt is you've got hair cells which are actually in a continued precursor state, so they're able to continuously produce new hair cells should they convert to hair cells should they wish to. Another idea of that is if we block notch signaling with DAPT during regeneration, this is in a utricle, this is the crest of proliferation, you have large numbers of hair cells very closely together. The mosaic's lost. Supporting cells are therefore, when notch is blocked in the adult animal, able to convert to hair cells. So this would suggest that perhaps in the newt, the precursor-like cells persist. It turns out that actually conversion also occurs in chickens. These are experiments that I've done. This is one where there was a loss of hair cells initially, one BRDU labelled cell. Here, there's lots of hair cells which haven't got a BRDU label and they've got their little feet. Here, it's shown that using ATOH1 labelling, because ATOH1 is expressed only in developing cells, so we've got new hair cells here, we've got BRDU labelling out here. So there seems to be two ways in a chicken in which hair cells can come about, one through conversion and the other through division. That raises the questions of how many hair cell types, supporting cell types there are. Now, this comes from blocking gap junctions and sticking tracer into different supporting cells. This is in the undamaged gap junction block tissue. There are two morphological types, one with a nucleus down the bottom and a fairly thin body, one with a fatter body and its nucleus quite high up. Also, if you take hair cells out, you can get two different morphological forms of hair cells. So this is when the supporting cells have expanded. There are two morphological types, one with lots of microtubules in, one without. And if you do physiological analysis, patch clamping on cells where the gap junctions have been blocked, you get two physiological signatures. One which is pretty nondescript and actually is the physiological signature of cells in the undamaged BP. This comes from some cells where there is the physiological signature suggests there is a non-specific cation channel activated within these cells. Unfortunately, because the cells have expanded, we can't tell whether these two cell types relate to these two cell types because there's morphological distinctions lost once the body of the cells expanded. Nevertheless, both of these suggest that there are more than one supporting cell type in the basal upper pillar. But the upshot is that we find that there are two ways you can get hair cells. One is through division, one is through conversion. So how does it relate to mammals? So some time ago, we did some studies. These are in vivo in guinea pig utricles. We ablate all the hair cells, and over a period of time, we can see hair bundles coming back. This isn't a repair process, because if we cut sections, we can see that the hair cells are numbers, the bodies are increasing over time. You have to look at how long this is taking. But when these cells are recovering, first of all, they show all the morphological features of immature hair bundles. So when hair bundles first develop, this kind of cilium sticking up in the middle, it then becomes eccentrically positioned on one side. The eccentric positioning finishes up with these hair bundles actually taking up their orientation that's correct for their position in the epithelium. So somewhere within this tissue, there is a memory for where a hair cell is and how it should, and the direction in which it should be oriented. Again, that is something we don't know how that happens. Then hair cells in vivo also become re-innovated. GAP43 is expressed. This is a very old piece of work, which is why the slides look like it is. But nevertheless, we can see GAP43 is upregulated, and these regenerated hair cells become re-innovated. It isn't extensive. If you actually measure the number of hair cells, this is the loss and recovery. If you actually measure how much is actually recovered, it's only about 20 to 25% of the original cells actually come back under ideal conditions over a very long period. It doesn't occur through proliferation. So this is an in vivo experiment where the hair cells have been ablated on one side, BRDU has been given to the animal systemically, so you've got a control in each animal. Sometimes, very occasionally, you get a supporting cell nucleus labeled. You get a lot of labeling in the mesenchyme underneath. But in the treated ears, where the hair cells have been lost, the number of BRDU labeled cells is insufficient to account for the number of hair cells that appear, new hair cells that appear. And also, we never see division. We do see, however, a lot of proliferation in the connective tissue underneath. Whether this is to do with macrophages being upregulated subsequently, we don't know. So this could be, or it could be, there are cells being generated which have an influence on the damaged epithelium. Again, we don't know that. But we do have morphological evidence that they convert. Here is a cell sitting on the basement membrane, a supporting cell with an organized bundle. It's got a foot and an organized bundle, and a foot and a proper bundle. So there's morphological evidence that we get conversion from a supporting cell to a hair cell in mammals. So we get this hair cell death, supporting cells directly converting is what happens, seems to happen in a mammal. So those kinds of studies have led to the idea of how you might induce regeneration in a damaged ear. So there's two ways that has been conjectured. One is to transfect or transduce the supporting cell with ATOH1, since that's the gene that's important for making a precursor cell into a hair cell. The other, which is, I think, is a bit more speculative for various reasons, is to try to block notch activation so that the supporting cell is prevented from being a hair cell and then will convert back to one. So there are gamma secretases inhibitors that try to be used, and one of the ones we've used is TAPI1 to block TACE up here, TNF-alpha converting into one. And we've done that in human tissue. So we've got a consortium of surgeons across the UK who can get this stuff out for us from patients undergoing particular form operation. We normally have lots of hair cells within these cultures, within the explants. But just as a sort of warning to you all, in some of these people, so these are from elderly patients. They've just been come straight out. And what you can see in this 65-year-old, I'm older than that, there are very few hair cells. There's a few here. This 80-year-old female has almost none. So this is one of the reasons, probably, why falls in the elderly occur and why looking at regeneration in the system is actually quite important. But if you look at this in detail, in higher detail, what we see, although there are mature hair cells, there are actually some which look immature. In fact, we can take those out and look at them in higher power, these are some of those immature bundles from those elderly patients. And they look remarkably like regenerating hair cells from guinea pigs and from chickens. This may mean that actually in humans there is a slow capacity retained throughout life to spontaneously generate hair cells, regenerate those that have been lost. So the idea is, can you make that better? So we can maintain these explant cultures for at least 21 days in vitro. Nicely distributed hair cells. We're using myosin 7 here as a marker, as you'll see, for hair cells. The hair cells die by exactly the same way as we see in vivo. That is, they normally die by apoptosis. Some get extruded, but the important point is that they're taken up by supporting cells, showing the supporting cells are still active. And ultimately, you get no hair cells at all from the procedures that we're using. So we're using aminoglycoside, high concentration for a long time, and we can ablate almost all of the hair cells in those cultures. Supporting cells are also all right, because if we do this dye injection, we can see that they're all connected together. They're viable and they're connected together, so supporting cells are healthy in these cultures. And when we use a virus, an adenovirus vector, which has GFP and 801 on, driven independently from CMV promoters, the supporting cells can get transduced quite effectively and quite efficiently. We know it's going to supporting cells because they're SOX2 positive, the supporting cells, and it's SOX2 positive cells which have taken up the GFP. And we know that alpha 5 v beta 5 is a known receptor for adenovirus, and we know that alpha v beta 5 is expressed in these human neutrophils. So there's a logic to using the adenovirus. Cells that are transfected, some of them produce ATRH1, some of them don't. So there's an ATRH expressed in a GFP expressing cell, there's ATRH1 expressed in GFP expressing cells. There are some cells which are less good at that are expressing 801 but not GFP. Cells that have expressed GFP also express myosin 7 ultimately. And some of the cells which are myosin 7 positive and GFP positive show those shapes that are consistent with a supporting cell converting to a hair cell. And if we take a large number, we actually get quite a lot of myosin 7 positive cells. But one of the things you'll notice is they're often in clusters. They're often sticking adjacent to each other. And we do some counts, and there is a significant number of myosin 7A positive cells produced. We've also done some studies using trying to block Notch. TAPI1 just about gives us a significant number, but that TLY4115575 did almost nothing. So there's almost no hair cell generation in this system using these inhibitors. The hair cells not only express GFP, they also have specialization at their apical surfaces. They produce these things which I seem to think look a bit like sea urchins, but they've got these bundles of microvilli, and if we label for myosin 7 GFP and actin, remember, being what stereocilia are formed of, these are actin-positive projections. So the cells produce an actin-positive top. They produce myosin 7, so these transduced cells produce a hair cell-like form. And if we take a section through that, that's SEM sample has been cut for sectioning, you see the cells with lots of microvilli have a hair cell-like morphology with the nucleus towards the lumen, which is how a hair cell is. This sample cut for sectioning has a tail like you'd expect a converting cell and has a morphology just like a hair cell. So you're getting a sort of conversion. And if we look at the bundles, they have this central kind of cilium, which we'd expect if we have a regenerating cell, a new cell, very similar to our regenerating hair cells. However, we never yet have been able to form a mature hair bundle. None of these systems have we ever got a mature hair bundle, which suggests that differentiation is incomplete. So we've also done a transcriptome analysis on this, and we've taken tissue at 5 days after the ATY transduction, and compared it with tissue which has been killed with gentamicin, we find 335 hair cell marker genes are upregulated, including several downstream targets of ACRH1. So there is a tendency to produce all of those, the genes that we would expect during development, some of them are upregulated. And just to show that graphically, this myosin 7, PCP4, these are all hair cell marker genes, including Jagged2. Two supporting cell genes are actually downregulated, which I guess would fit in with the idea that if you change a supporting cell into a hair cell, your supporting cell number will decline. So that may fit in with that idea. If we take a list of something we see is large numbers of transcription factors that are upregulated, but interestingly, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 chromatin modifiers which are downregulated. So there's clearly a change in gene expression pattern generated by the ATOH1. What would be interesting to see what each one of these different chromatin modifiers actually do in isolation. So we know that the transcriptome analysis confirms that transduction drives it towards a supporting cell fate. So there's possibly a potential to induce regeneration. However, not all hair cell genes are upregulated, which confirms that differentiation is incomplete. And we need to have additional factors. Now, we've tried doing various external things, like incubating retinoic acid, which is supposed to encourage hair cell formation. It doesn't happen. We've got a few possible candidate genes we'd like to look at if somebody would give us the money to add to our mixture to see where they upregulate. And while Jagged2, the notch ligand, is upregulated, the notch components that one would expect in supporting cell, like notch HES5, they seem to be almost, I say absent, they're not completely absent from the transcriptome. They're certainly not upregulated. There's certainly no evidence that these components are present in the system. That would account for why the hair cells in clusters when we see them. There is no way to stop the adjacent cell becoming a supporting cell. But it has clinical significance because there's at least two clinical trials going on of using notch inhibition as a way to regenerate hair cells for hearing in the organ of Corti. Which brings us to what happens in the organ of Corti. This summarizes what happens after loss in the organ of Corti. So the hair cells are lost and replaced by expanding supporting cells. Over time, they all get lost, then the inner starts to go later. Then the whole system gets replaced by some other sort of tissue. And we've done quite a lot of studies looking at what happens during this phase. Now, it's worth pointing out that in the organ of Corti during development, it starts off as a compact epithelium, a bit like a utricle or a saccule or a basilar papilla, and then it has a late stage of maturation in which it picks up the orientation. Now, there's some evidence, not of mine, but of other people, that if you take this tissue like this, this would be about P4 in a mouse. This would be present after about P10 in a mouse, P12 maybe. At this level, there is evidence that you can induce that you actually knock out hair cells and some of them spontaneously regenerate. You can induce hair cell regeneration at this age, but absolutely nothing happens when it gets past about P10, or actually past a P8. So these cells are developing specializations. You can see here these big microtubule bundles. That's one of their specializations. They develop because this is a mechanical system and they provide the micromechanics that allow hair bundles over here to be moved backwards and forwards. And we've looked at, there are a number of markers that develop in supporting cells over the time at which it's becoming specialized. These include, as I talked about, the microtubule bundles. There are also various potassium channels, KCC4 and KR4.1, gap junction proteins, K26 and CX30, and glutamate aspartate transporter. These are important for the supporting cell to maintain the environment to allow the hair cell to work. These aren't a problem for a vestibular system because KCC4 isn't expressed. The KR4.1 isn't expressed in the hair cells, it's expressed in the calceal endings. And mutations in these connexin genes, all of these mutations in these genes cause deafness in people, but they don't have an effect on the vestibular system. So there's a difference between the specialization of supporting cells in the mature organ of Corti and the mature vestibular system. So we've looked at using these as markers to see what happens to them after hair cells have lost. So this is the repaired epithelium, as I like to call it. Here are all the outer hair cells have gone. The inner hair cells are still in place. It's here the inner hair cells have gone as well, but it's closed up. And it looks a bit like this, so where these supporting cells here have actually started migrating across this epithelium and into this tunnel. And if we look at these markers for tubulin, KCC4 and GLAST, in this state, all of those markers are still there. So here is tubulin, and you may be able to see the microtubules, certainly here, but in these cells. Here's KCC4 in a cell which is at approximately, so to orient you, this is the region between the two, the tunnel here. This is actually in that tunnel. And here is GLAST in a cell that's running across it. What happens subsequently is that cells from outside that epithelium migrate across the epithelium. Here you've got the inner hair cells. Here's that pillar cell region we saw before. This outer hair cell region is invaded by these cells. And we know from the outside because those cells express connexin 26 far more readily than the cells in the organ of Corti itself. Those cells are expressing CX26. So there are cells migrating across this epithelium. And ultimately, you finish up with this squamous-like epithelium in patches. So there's a bit of a repaired epithelium here, and then this flat epithelium in the middle. And if you count the number of nuclei across the epithelium in this state, it has significantly fewer cells than you would in the normal, suggesting that the supporting cells die. However, we've never yet been able to capture anything that shows a supporting cell dying. But the numbers suggest that that's what happened. So in the organ of Corti, I'll use the term dereferentiate, they don't go back towards a more precursor state that's likely to be a subject that you could put in a gene to make it turn into a hair cell. They become actually replaced and they probably die. One of the problems is if you're trying to do this as a therapy, you may have two different sorts of epithelium across the same epithelium, across the Corti from base to apex. And what you don't know from outside is what the pathology is like inside. The ear is inaccessible. You have got no way of knowing. And you probably need different regenerative therapies for the different areas. I haven't shown you, but also this is genetically variable. Different strains of mice with different propensities to lose hair cells, one which has early onset hearing loss and loses its hair cell, one which doesn't have, has late onset hair cell loss. The speed and extent at which this happens differs. So that means in people, there's probably likely to be a genetic effect which affects how extensive these reorganizations occur. So as I say, these features represent considerable challenges for effective hair cell regeneration to restore hearing. And I shall leave it there just to tell you that nearly all the work was done by Ruth. She did the work on newts and humans. Dan did most of the work with the electrophysiology and the dye staining. Chick work was done by Regina, who refused to have a picture taken. Mike Lovett did the transcriptome analysis. Jeff Holt gave us the virus. These people are the people at UCL, Cambridge, Birmingham and Manchester from whom we got the human tissue. And then we have various funding sources. Thank you.